The BRICS summit is underway in South Africa. In the next half hour, we'll look at how the bloc began, what it has accomplished, and why dozens of countries from Africa, Latin America, Asia, and the Middle East are lining up to join the club. Will BRICS expand and forge into a counterweight to the West? We'll also look at whether there's enough space for civil society in the future plans and policies of BRICS countries and the bloc as a whole. Straight Talk Africa starts now. Hello there and welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from VOA's headquarters in Washington. I'm Heidi Adams. It is great to be with you. The leaders of Brazil, India, China and South Africa are gathered for the 15th BRICS Summit. You'll remember this conference was mired in international intrigue even before it began because of Russian President Vladimir Putin. His travel to South Africa was complicated by an international criminal court arrest warrant for him over the alleged abduction of children from Ukraine. The Russian leader is joining the BRICS summit via video. His foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, is there in person. But it is the possible expansion of the bloc that's topping the agenda in Johannesburg this week, raising questions about whether we are seeing the beginnings of a new world order. Now, if you don't know much about BRICS, I can help you out. Here are some fast facts for you. The name BRIC was coined in 2001 by then Goldman Sachs chief economist Jim O'Neill. He was referring to four countries which at the time were enjoying high rates of economic growth: Brazil, Russia, India and China. Now, this grouping then forged a coalition and South Africa joined in 2010. That's when it became known as BRICS. And together, these five countries account for a quarter of the global economy and 43% of the world's population. Now, apart from geopolitics, the group focuses on economic cooperation and increasing multilateral trade and development. Now, around 40 countries have reportedly expressed interest in joining the bloc, including Iran, Saudi Arabia, Turkey, Cuba, and Venezuela. Among the African countries hoping to join BRICS are Ethiopia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Egypt, Algeria, and Gabon. Well, let's go to the BRICS summit in Johannesburg now, where Ziyanda Ngcobo is standing by for us. Ziyanda is a senior political reporter from VOA affiliate station Newsroom Africa. Ziyanda, so great to have you with us. There's been a lot of talk about de-dollarization and the expansion of the BRICS bloc being top of mind there in Sandton. What can you tell us about what's actually being discussed at the summit?
Well, at this stage, the issue of de-dollarization has not yet been tabled. As we speak, the leaders of the BRICS nations are still in a closed-door session. Earlier on, though, we did hear from them speaking about issues of territorial sovereignty and the UN Charter. No surprise that Russian President Vladimir Putin hitting out quite hard at the West, really, was intimating about how that 1956 agreement and the European security architecture moving in closer, reflecting on the invasion of Crimea in 2014 as being one of the first salvos that were fired by the West. Brazil's Lula da Silva also echoing the sentiments of our very own South African President Cyril Ramaphosa, who spoke about the abuse of financial institutions in dealing with geopolitical tensions. So this would then lead and answer your question in some way in terms of the establishment of alternative financial systems. And that's certainly a conversation that is ongoing at this summit as I speak to you.
Ziyanda, you know very well, but South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has, of course, been under tremendous international pressure at home and abroad over his government's foreign policy stance and decisions, especially of late. What does hosting the summit, what does showing South Africa and the world his place in BRICS, what does all of this do for President Ramaphosa, both at home and on the international stage?
Well, certainly, I think his comments today are indicative of Cyril Ramaphosa, who's feeling much more confident, really hitting out. And I think it will be anticipated that the reaction from the West is him having taken a swipe at them with that comment about geopolitical tensions and financial institutions being abused, because we know that Russia, of course, was removed from SWIFT as well at some stage as a part of the reaction to the conflicts between Russia and Ukraine. It also gives an indication that within this meeting that South Africa, even though it contributes the least towards this bloc, is really punching above its weight and is showing that it's no small player. The South African government has been at pains to emphasize that this is not a gathering or an anti-West gathering. It is rather a diversification of the countries that South Africa interacts with, and multilateral institutions that South Africa interacts with. And I think a lot of the undertones that we've heard during the sessions by the heads of state, it seems as though that they've also been trying to, speak out against that. And it would seem that they're taking a swipe at the U.S. in particular. I mean, we heard yesterday from the representative from China who was representing President Xi Jinping, Wang Wentao, who was basically also talking about how this gathering is not to say who should be friends with the other, but the gathering of friends, old friends, who began this journey in 2009 and are still continuing in that fashion.
Zianda, just a final question here. Anything else that we can expect to come out of this conference? Are you hearing anything new that we can expect might be decided come the end of this meeting?
I tell you what we do know for sure at this stage is that the expansion of BRICS is almost a given. It would seem that as the discussions amongst the heads of state continues at this hour, that the discussion is around the criteria that would lead or that would be underpinning who gets to join this BRICS bloc. There's been lots of debate about whether this is about resources, how are these countries going to interact with each other, the role of the new development bank, does it even have the capacity to provide loans and to be able to interact with all these countries? Is it going to be on a currency to currency basis, or will that new BRICS currency, the so-called de-dollarization, actually get underway? So as it stands, that seems to be a given at this stage.
And those criteria are exactly what we're going to discuss a little later on here in the show. Zianda, thank you so much. Great reporting there. Zianda Nkobo is a senior political reporter from VOA affiliate station Newsroom Africa. She's reporting for us from the BRICS summit in Sandton, Johannesburg in South Africa. Well, we're going to take a short break here, and when we come back, what has BRICS really accomplished in the last 15 years? Does every member want the club to expand? And does civil society get a seat at the table or on the sidelines? My guests are standing by. We will get into all of that on the other side of the break. Back in a moment.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
In 2010, the Young African Leaders Initiative, or YALI, has brought 500 young people from across Africa to the United States. The fellows selected for the highly competitive Washington Fellowship Program have a proven record of accomplishment in promoting innovation and positive change in their organizations, institutions, or communities. On the next edition of Our Voices, we will introduce you to some extraordinary young African women to share their experiences in the Washington Fellowship for Young African Leaders Program. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
You're watching VOA's Red Carpet. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us each week right here on Red Carpet. We bring you the latest in...
With Straight Talk Africa, welcome back. Our focus this week is BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa. About 15 years ago, these were the emerging economies of the time. But are they still a force to be reckoned with? And what has BRICS accomplished for its members? And what would expanding the club really mean? My guests are Phumlani Majozi. He's a macroeconomic analyst based in Johannesburg, South Africa. Also joining us from Joburg is Lisa John. She's the Secretary General of the Civicus Global Alliance. Lisa and Phumlani, a warm welcome to Straight Talk Africa. So great to have you here with me. And Phumlani, I'm going to start out with you. As we said, about 10, 15 years ago, the BRICS countries were the emerging, most promising economies of the time. Countries like Brazil and India still are. I mean, there's also reporting that China's 40-year boom might be coming to an end. But are these still the economies that really should have this kind of status that make up BRICS?
Thank you so much. It's great to be on the show for the first time. Look, there has been growth, no doubt. There has been an influence we have seen over the past years. But no doubt that things are quite slowing down. When you look at the Brazil's economy over the in recent years, there has been sort of a slowdown there. When you look at China as well, there is a slowdown in their economy. So the challenge is now, as these countries have sort of risen, have sort of emerged, there are these challenges now of economies sort of their economies sort of slowing down. So it's been a journey for the BRICS countries. I must say that I strongly believe that where the BRICS countries need to focus on is around the increased productivity. It won't be what will make these countries to prosper around the world. It will not be a matter of issuing loans or grants or donations from one from one to another. To be a matter of, can they reform their economies to be more pro-market, more pro-business, open markets, free trade? Those are the areas that this the BRICS has to focus on. It's inevitable that we are having. It's been inevitable that we're having a group of countries like BRICS, and I believe it's a positive idea. But it means it's about what happens. It can't be about donations. It's about freeing up economies and increasing productivity within the countries. So I think more work needs to be done there from a productivity perspective.
Lisa, why are dozens of countries clamoring to join BRICS? What's the attraction there for them? I've seen them described as West-weary nations. Is that what is needed here? An alternative club that is more global, more representative, a real counterweight, essentially, to the West?
Thank you, Heidi. To give credit where it's due, there is really a reaction to the restrictions or the conditions that were imposed by the IMF and the World Bank, so the Bretton Woods institutions, which has really caused countries to run towards BRICS, particularly in relation to the BRICS Bank. But what's really worrying at this point for civil society and communities around the world is the agenda of de-dollarization not really being a financial agenda, but more of a geopolitical agenda, as was also stated yesterday at the summit. So the geopolitics around this really is that economic and trade sanctions continue to be the most important way that countries exercise mutual accountability or responsibility to adhere to global norms for accountability, for rights related standards. And the absence of the dollar as this kind of force which could be used to influence countries to stay on track would mean that, states could just go rogue. They could completely ignore international codes of conduct, as we've seen with the Ukraine invasion. And that is really cause for concern. So I think unpacking the de-dollarization agenda, calling it out for what it seems to be, which is really, this bringing in of national chauvinism, this bringing in of a culture where we don't actually, governments need to be held accountable to any agreements that have been put together in the past.
Pumlani and Lisa, I do actually want to get into the sort of the optics with both of you. Lisa, you just mentioned chauvinism here. But Pumlani, BRICS expansion and, of course, de-dollarization are now conversations and aspirations that seem almost impossible to ignore. What are the pros and cons of this kind of agenda? And are all the current members on board with these ideas?
Well, just another point to add as well in my previous comments is that trade as well has grown over the past years within the BRICS space, which is also a positive. But now moving into your question about expansion and moving away the attempts or the efforts to move away from the dollar. So my view with that is, and then if BRICS expands, then what does it become? So the criteria would be very important. Let's remember how BRICS was founded. There was a different concept of what it ought to be, what it is, what the goals and the objectives are. Even the acronym itself, BRICS, was easy to pronounce. So if you are going to have plus minus 20 countries coming through Haiti to join and be part of BRICS, how are you going to work out the acronym there? But also the issues of, as I said, criteria is very important. And also, how is it going to work? What are the key issues that will be looked into? So that will be very important to determine. The idea of these countries thinking of or proposing the idea of having an alternative to the dollar, I don't see that as something that is negative. They can do that. That, for me, I strongly believe in competition. The more, the better. If there's an alternative currency that can be in place, that is fine. The investors, the people who hold foreign exchanges will decide which currency they go with, right? But it's very important to also highlight that the dollar remains chief at the moment. The dollar, the US dollar remains really the trusted currency in the global markets. It's within a very stable political environment. So its primacy will be with us for the foreseeable future, the US dollar. But still, though, it's fine if this currency, the alternative by BRICS, is being proposed. That's okay. It will be a matter of whoever chooses to use that currency. That will be fine. So it's going to be very interesting to see how things play out. It's a very fascinating time with respect to currencies as well.
Lisa, civil society has traditionally held a lot of weight in countries like South Africa, Brazil, and India. Talk to us a little bit about the challenges that civil society groups in BRICS countries face and what their future there looks like.
So civil society as we know it, which is the existence of independent groups, groups of citizens, or also groups of, from in terms of independent media, and their ability to play a watchdog role in terms of calling out violations or risks to the larger population. I think their engagement with the BRICS in its current form is extremely limited. China and Russia are actually closed countries in terms of, indicators of civic freedom. So in these two countries, no populations have the freedom to express themselves, to organize, to peacefully associate. And there are, kind of severe to fatal consequences of that. India itself has been downgraded by Civicus's, monitor on civic freedoms to repressed, which is just one stage better than being closed in 2019. And that's the result of a slew of laws restrictions on the operation of independent civil society and media groups. And South Africa, which was initially the leader in terms of at least the ability to exercise civic and democratic rights, has also taken a setback as of last year. It's now an obstructed country along with Brazil, and in South Africa, it's really due to the reprisals on human rights defenders and whistleblowers. So overall, the environment within the BRICS countries is really far from ideal for civil society organizations and for ordinary citizens who just want to speak up, who want to ask questions, express dissent, demand dialogue. And therefore, the ability then of BRICS, which hosts 40% of the world's population, to propose an alternate system of, you know, public accountability, decentralization, and democratization of the economic world order, at least, seems really suspect, right? I mean, there's a lot that needs to be improved in-house before you can offer a global alternative to others.
To those points, Pumlani, if you look at the countries that want to join BRICS, if you look at BRICS's current makeup, and you look at them in terms of how representative these countries are of the voices and interests in their individual societies, in your view, who and what is missing? And even if this group expands, who and what would be missing?
Well, it will be very important that, especially in the case of South Africa, my country, we're a country that believes in human rights, we believe in you know, in civil society. Though of course we do face our challenges, but at least constitutionally and our frameworks and how we have structured this, that is how we want to approach how things go within the country. Of course, the countries that have really want to be part of the BRICS, some of them, how they've manage themselves, how civil society is treated in those countries, that can be questionable, right? So how things are organized, whether there are human rights upheld in those countries, again, that could also be questionable in some of these countries. I strongly believe that how the criteria is set must be kept in mind, or at least I do hope that such criteria as to who are we dealing with here. Yes, of course, there are economic interests that need to be pursued, but to what extent do you go? Do you fully go and ignore the ideas or the belief in human rights and straight focus on economic interests? Or do you also account the fact that really how do you deal with how do you bring in into an economic group of countries, countries that whose political institutions are unstable? And everything can be questioned in there with respect to governance. So it's the BRICS. They really need to determine as to what is the criteria here, and which direction they want to take. In my perspective.
Lisa, when we look at the optics of the summit, I mean, I see a lot of male representation here. Does civil society and other interest groups, do you see there being an appetite for giving them a greater seat or a seat at all at the table? Or do you see this being a fight for that seat at the table and civil society groups largely observing from the sidelines? We seem to have
a lot
to
be worried about.
Please continue. Okay.
Have a lot to be worried about in terms of their ability to engage with the decisions of the BRICS. Economic decisions aren't taken in a bubble. They have a direct impact on the lives of people. Both through Civicus's own work in the last 12 years, economic decisions have been the number one trigger of political instability in countries around the world, even beyond the BRICS, right? So issues that are discussed in terms of economic terms have a direct impact on the way that people experience, opportunities or their ability to fulfill basic needs at a ground level. And the track record of the BRICS is remarkably disastrous in terms of their ability to actually address issues of inequality. So South Africa is the number one country in terms of being the most unequal country in the world economically on the Gini coefficient index. Brazil is number nine. Russia, China, and India have now the reputation of having a rise in oligarchs as the common feature in all of these three countries. In India alone, which now has more billionaires than Russia, 166 billionaires had more wealth in terms of their combined income than the union budget of the entire country of India in 2018. And similarly, in the period of the pandemic, you had 7. I don't think that's the kind of trajectory that any country in the BRICS or outside the BRICS wants to see, because it is literally the recipe for political conflict, for polarization, for the kind of, you know, division of communities and societies that is really, you know, not healthy for a progressive or inclusive state that the BRICS kind of promotes and professes to be in support of.
Pumlani, earlier this week, President Cyril Ramaphosa addressed the nation and he went on to explain to South Africans his government's foreign policy and why the BRICS relationships are important to South Africa. Why do you think he felt the need to make this address? Who was he really talking to and what does it do for him at home and on the global stage?
Well, he did that because there's been a sort of a wide spread belief that his government has sort of stood more on the side of Russia, given the Russia-Ukraine war. And even me personally as an analyst, that was sort of my view over the past year or so, that our government has been softer and stood more on the side of Russia. So Ramaphosa has been hard at work over the past few months making the case that my government is not pro-Russia with what's going on in the Ukraine-Russia war. He went to the peace mission with other African leaders a few months back, went to Ukraine and Russia as well, and came back and then went for the Russia-Africa summit as well. And then this speech that we are talking about that he gave during the last weekend. So he has been sort of on them over the past few months, having to explain himself to say, no, actually, the accusations that my administration is sort of more supportive of Russia are incorrect. So hence it was very important for him to explain that. And I strongly believe that he has made an effort over the past months. And I think it's been good to sort of highlight that, at least make sure that there is no any sort of confusion from anybody around where South Africa stands, and that it's never seen that South Africa stands on the side of Russia when it comes to what's happening in Ukraine.
Lisa, we've got about just less than 2 minutes here. When this summit ends, what would you like to have come out of it? What are you looking to see that will really give you some reassurance about the role of civil society and whether BRICS could actually work and be a good thing?
I think their ability to embrace of rights and to really commit to being more open, more accountable to the global system that exists, rather than throwing it aside and saying that they will create a new system that nobody really knows will look like.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Pumlani Majozi and Lynn John, Lisa John, thank you so much to both of you for your insights and for your time. And that is where we're going to have to leave our show for this week. A huge thanks to all my guests, of course, to the folks at our South African affiliate station, Newsroom Africa, along with all our other affiliate stations across the African continent who bring you this show every single week. And thank you for always joining us on television, radio, and online. I'll see you next time. Until then, goodbye.